Welcome back. Today we have an encore performance, and we've chosen to do this because, one, it's the best of the best, but two, it's so pertinent to the way we eat in spring and summer, drinking sweet drinks, eating fruits, and there are cautions we have in dealing with this type of diet. So, listen, learn, and I know you will enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Good afternoon. Here we are in the best of the best New York weather. And we have a show today. I am here with Carol Peterson. Welcome, Carol.
Good afternoon. How are you, Corrine?
Oh, feeling great. A little frisky. I wanted to talk about sweeteners. But I wanted to begin by referencing that with our genes and how our genes respond to sweeteners. Are you aware of this, Carol?
Well, you and I talked about this a little bit this week, and you found an amazing study about the impact of sugar. Let's talk about sugar first and foremost.
Yes.
What is going on when we use sugar?
Well, it definitely has an impact. It has a very strong impact on our genes, and a team studying the impact of diet on heart tissue found that cells showed the effects of a single sugar hit for up to 14 days. That's 2 weeks. And the cells switched off their genetic controls designed to protect against diabetes and heart disease. Regular poor eating could amplify this effect with genetic damage that has been shown to last months or years and potentially could pass through our bloodlines. So this finding leads even more credence to the fact that we are what we eat. And when you eat sugar, not only do your genes turn off controls designed to protect you from heart disease and diabetes, but the impact lasts for 2 weeks.
That's really quite scary. I'd like to just jump into a thought. I was in Rome for a conference, and I normally don't drink juice because it really is concentrated sugar. I might have some juice, but I diluted out with water, but over there they had blood orange juice.
Ooh.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's got a little tart. It's got a little tart flavor.
No, but it's quite sweet. And so I had several glasses of the blood orange juice as something special I don't usually get. And I realized later that this is not a good practice to be drinking all this juice. So I wonder, in thinking about what we just talked about, the genes, what happens to all these babies whose moms are feeding them apple juice in their bottles? They're so young, and they're already getting these really significant sugar hits.
Very significant sugar hits. Babies have a taste for sweetness. Breast milk is sweet. But what happens is that that sweetness is bound. It's not absorbed the same way as concentrated sweeteners. Just like your blood orange juice, if you ate the same orange, it would have a different physiologic effect on your body, on your cells, than drinking the juice, because the concentration and the removal of the fiber to a large degree makes a very big difference in terms of saturation, absorption, and elevation of blood glucose. And we know that that has effects on our genes. For instance, a substance called isothiocyanate that's found in broccoli sparks hundreds of genetic changes, activating some genes that fight cancer and switching off others that fuel tumors. So it's very clear that just as a bad diet can lead to negative changes in your genes, a good diet can lead to positive ones. Going back to a good diet would have an effect in terms of building you up and turning on our genes, our genetic protection. See, it's not that you are genetically programmed. It's the fact that your genetic programming is switching on and off constantly, and we're in control of that.
Oh, that makes me feel a little better.
Good.
While we were talking about sweeteners, and we found more breaking news, which an article is going just published in Nature, which is quite a prestigious magazine, a scientific magazine. Its title, Artificial Sweeteners Induce Glucose Intolerance by Altering the Gut Microbiota.
That's really interesting. Can you explain that one to us?
So they took a number of mice, but this also had a human branch. This is quite a large study in that they looked at what is called Splenda, they looked at what is called Equal, aspartame, they looked at saccharin, they looked at glucose, and what they found was that as they fed this to the mice, and then they had the human branch and the same thing happened, is that it changed the gut flora. And they could find marked changes in your body's ability to deal with glucose and insulin, leading to parameters that would make the mice or the humans look pre-diabetic, and these would persist. They went further, and they took the fecal material from the mice and from the humans, and they put this in mice who had sterile intestines, and they transferred that abnormal mix of microbes into those mice and made them pre-diabetic too.
So people are drinking artificial sweeteners thinking that it's going to help them lose weight. It's also going to give them this sweet flavor without changing their metabolism, so they can maintain a normal metabolism while they're getting the sweet taste, while there's sweet with no payback. And what they're finding is that there is a payback. It's changing the metabolism of those who ingest it in a way that's in a pre-diabetic way, the same way that sugar would react in the body and change our metabolism, put us in a position of being pre-diabetic. So, Carol, that had to do with intestinal flora?
Yes. I think we've made this observation. This observation has been in several places about something going on, and they were thinking about brain chemistry and its interactions with glucose and insulin causing this, that the diet sodas and things, the artificial sweeteners, were triggering a sweet response, the same as sugar, and the cascade of events led to the same effect, like a pre-diabetic or diabetic situation, just as if you ate sugar instead of the artificial sweetener. So it puts everything to a lie that the diet products with the artificial sweeteners that will not have any negative effects. This article about the microbiota, which I think we are starting to look at much more closely, really enlightens us, I believe, because it gives us a definite mechanism. The other where has been an observation, but we really didn't put our finger on a possible mechanism and really tease that all out. So I can see why this was accepted at Nature, which is extremely prestigious, bringing this to light. The authors of this study call for a complete reversal on how we look at artificial sweeteners. Another thing that happened when I got home after drinking my blood orange juice, I came across, this was a little article in Memoriam for a Dr. H.J. Roberts. He's considered the father of the anti-aspartame movement. He first became interested in aspartame because he had a patient that was a friend who started having Parkinson's disease, or what was diagnosed as Parkinson's, and made the observation that this person had large intake of diet sodas, and thought to ask the person to take that out of their diet, and lo and behold, the signs of Parkinson's disappeared. So more and more people looked at this, and this doctor has spent 30 years of research on this. They found that aspartame, and we know it as Equal, was one of the trade names, is really quite a serious neurotoxin. I don't know if you've seen anybody in your practice, Corinne, with heavy drinkers of diet sodas, which is the common ingredient. I remember one particular person who was plagued with years and years of headaches and was on a 6-soda-a-day habit, and just removing the sodas removed the problem entirely. And this poor young woman had been from doctor to doctor to doctor to try and get relief from her headache. Dr. Roberts has left all of his research in the hands of another practitioner, Dr. Betty Martini, who has a website called Mission Possible International. So at this website, and when I had a look, it was quite tremendous. You can also have access to all his research. I found the name of his book. It had been Protecting Mankind. So for 30 years, this doctor worked quite hard and extensively to try and alert us to the dangers of this artificial sweetener. So, Corinne, which sweetener should we talk about next?
Well, let's explain. Let's begin with aspartame or Equal. And let's talk about it. You know, it has quite a political history. The FDA tried to block it because it wasn't safe and kept it blocked for quite a few years. They found that the studies showing how safe it was were deceptive and fraudulent. They even found that in the studies that Cyril did, that there were tumors that were cut out and thrown away at the time and never documented. And as a result, the FDA put forward criminal charges against Cyril. The end result is that they were going to court. Well, Cyril then hired the principal lawyer, prosecuting lawyer, for the FDA. And when that happened, the whole case was put on hold because he was in control of the case. And then our dear Donald Rumsfeld became one of the principals in the Searle Company. And with his contacts, the criminal case was put on hold for such a long time that it then went out of the statute of limitations and they couldn't prosecute, the government couldn't prosecute this case. And the end result is that with political pressure and lots of money and against the advice of a Dr. John Olney, a neurologist who was instrumental in getting monosodium glutamate removed from baby foods, he advocated against the aspartame, and the end result is that it became legal and is now consumed in countries worldwide with incredible health effects. Carol, can you name some of those?
Well, many of them, like I referred to begin with, are neurological in nature. This molecule is a nerve toxin and actually started being developed with that in mind. The researcher working with it noticed how sweet it was.
So 180 times sweeter than sugar.
Yeah, so that's how that whole thing got started. But any kind of neurological disorder like Parkinson's and MS and headaches, as I mentioned before.
Migraines, depression.
Right. Should be investigated. People, this should be a question on your intake form when you go see your doctor with a problem. If you consume this chemical. But better yet, let's not consume it.
I want to discuss a little bit about the components of aspartame. There's phenylalanine, which is an amino acid that is a precursor to neurotransmitters, aspartic acid, and methanol. Now, all of these are components in the food we eat, but yet when we take it in as aspartame, it's not bound. And so it saturates our brain. The methanol has been shown in the body to break down into diketopiperazine, known as a carcinogen. It's a known carcinogen. And that process of breaking the methanol down is sped up when the cans of soda, diet sodas, are kept in the warmth. It's also known, the methanol, to break down to formaldehyde, which is a brain toxin, and it accumulates in your cells, and it results in severe health consequences. Now, like I said, methanol is found naturally in some foods, but generally, it's bound with pectin. And so it moves through the body and can't be absorbed directly. But in this form, as aspartame or NutraSweet, it's totally available. And the blood-brain barrier has no protection to high and concentrated amounts of this very specific toxin.
Have you also read that aspartame, because of all this information, has gotten to be more and more recognized as maybe not a good choice, so they're deliberately starting to rename it Sweet Aminos?
Well, that's the truth, isn't it? No, I wasn't aware of that.
So buyer beware if you happen to come across that word. That is just another name for aspartame. And you're being diverted from the information that you know.
In 1992, the United States Air Force issued a warning to its pilots to avoid products containing aspartame because it had been linked to so many seizures, vertigo, dizziness, sudden memory loss, and gradual loss of vision. And so there's warnings out for people in positions that are in control of other lives. Specifically, what they found was that seizures were happening to pilots while they were flying. And so the U.S. Air Force has been aware of this and aware of this problem.
I know. It makes you wonder. When I go to the airport and I see airline personnel in the food court, I always look to see what they're eating.
Well, also, you know, so many of us, a large amount of the myth is that we use aspartame to avoid the weight gain of sugars. But it would surprise many of us to learn that aspartame may cause you to gain weight very directly. Even though it's marketed as reduced calorie, sugar-free diet, it actually can sabotage your weight control efforts. And there are two main reasons why. Phenylalanine and aspartic acid, they together stimulate the release of insulin and leptin, hormones which instruct your body to store fat. In addition, a large intake of phenylalanine will drive down another neurotransmitter precursor called serotonin. And when that's driven down, your ability to feel satisfied by food is blocked. When we eat a good meal, a delicious meal, what happens? Our serotonin goes up and we feel satisfied. When our serotonin goes down, we have food cravings. And what do we crave? We crave sweets and carbohydrates. And this can lead us into an uncontrolled weight gain. While we're being told and we're being advertised to use this drink or this artificial sweetener to help us control our weight.
Okay, so what about...
I know, I can tell by your voice something good is coming.
Yeah, what about I go into the health food store now, I look at the labels and I see many of the things that are being sold to us as consumers, thoughtful consumers, now contain pure cane sugar. Do you remember pure cane sugar from Hawaii? Is that a better choice for us? What's your opinion, Corinne?
Well, understand that type of sweetener extracted is not, well, first of all, in relationship to aspartame, let me directly answer the question. Yes, it's a better choice. But generally, a concentrated sweetener is not a good choice. All of these sweetened products are destroying our metabolism, making us hungrier, and literally changing our gene expression. So pure cane sugar is definitely, without a doubt, and you would never have thought that these words will come out of my mouth, without a doubt, a better choice than aspartame. Our body can respond to it on a more appropriate level, and we can still feel that we get full with it to a degree, because it's a combination of sugars, it's a combination of sucrose and fructose.
Right.
So our body can signal it. It's still something. The best in the world is to walk around like the kids in Central America. That is, if we're eating a sugar or a sweetener, with a slice of sugar cane and suck on it and chew on the fibers. You're getting zinc, you're getting iron, you're even getting some chromium in there, which helps balance our body's ability. But even to do that all day or to do that regularly, it's not good for us. It's not good for our teeth. It's not good for our bodies.
There's another little point about sugar
cane. Sugar, yes.
Is that it is now a GMO crop.
I didn't know that.
So that pure cane sugar from Hawaii that you and I grew up on is not the same. A lot of people don't realize that this is GMO. And we had Jeffrey Smith on earlier this year telling us about the many things to think about with GMO foods. So your pure cane sugar may not be the same. So if you are looking for pure cane sugar in your health store, make sure you find one that is labeled
non-GMO,
if we can get it, or organically produced. I think you can find it organically produced.
Oh, yes. I've seen that.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
So that's an important thing. Also, in my health food store, now I see these soda products. Zevia is one brand, sweetened with stevia. What do we think about stevia as a sweetener?
Oh, that's a full discussion. But we're going to go to a break and then get back. I would like to discuss stevia and understand it is an artificial sweetener. Is it safe? Is it healthy? How does our brain respond to it? I want to reiterate that evidence shows that aspartame actually worsens insulin sensitivity to a greater degree than even sugar. So if you know anybody using artificial sweetener aspartame, it's neurotoxic. It increases our food craving. It reduces our metabolism. It's a poison in our brain. What more can we say? We're speaking with Carol Peterson, pharmacist, and we're exploring left, right, center, the sweet of it all. We're exploring sweeteners, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm Corinne Frenari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and we're speaking with Carol Peterson, and we're talking about the sweet of it all, how it affects us, how it affects our genes, how it affects our brains, and we're exploring all forms of sweeteners. And right before the break, Carol brought up stevia. Carol, can you explain stevia to us? What is it?
Stevia is a plant and has been used traditionally in many cultures as a sweetener. If you buy the real stevia, it's going to be in a powder from the leaves. It'll be bright green. If it's not that color, you don't have stevia. And what you might have is, like in the product Truvia, and I don't know if I can say this right, it's riboticide.
Yes.
So the extracted, or actually probably chemically produced, of this one element that is contained in stevia. And just as an aside here, stevia is not recognized by the FDA as an approved sweetener.
Still. I didn't realize. I thought it was
Truvia is, and this particular chemical component, that is found in whole plant stevia is approved as a sweetener in the product Truvia. So I just want to jump back a little bit. Now, the FDA at certain times has taken a very aggressive stance against stevia as a sweetener, and it may be tied up into some of the politics we were talking about earlier about aspartame. But I recall a company who was distributing stevia and also had a cookbook about how to use stevia actually was rated by the FDA, had their products seized, and had their cookbooks burned. Now, this was not that long ago, in my lifetime, maybe a couple decades ago. So the sweet industry has quite the dark side. But let's go over to Truvia. So it's got the riboside, and it's got actually mainly another sweetener called erythria. Erythriol is a sugar alcohol. You can tell by the OL at the end of the word. And this is made by fermenting glucose with yeast. So some argue that this is a natural process, and some argue that this is too compromised. One of the issues here is that erythriol also may be a GMO crop, because it's made from glucose, which can be coming from corn, which is a GMO or BT toxin crop. So within that particular ingredient, there's also some things to really think about. So Truvia, although it sounds very innocent and maybe ideal, has some questionable parts to it.
And it really hasn't been well studied at this point, because they go under the framework of an herb or a natural substance, when in actuality, it really isn't. It's an extract that has been ripped or torn or separated from its total product. And now it has very unique effects, and those haven't really been studied. So now we're dealing with Truvia and Purvia. Both of those are extracts that have limited studies on them that we don't really know yet.
Okay, now that we've introduced erythriol, maybe we should talk about the other sugar alcohols and maltitol, which I have seen in sugar-free chocolates, and xylitol.
Oh, I love that one. I want to take that one.
Xylitol is quite a popular sweetener. Remember, all of these have the OL ending. They're the sugar alcohols. And xylitol has shown itself to be quite useful. Do you want to elaborate, Chris?
I would love to. You know, here we're talking about sugars, and can we believe that sugars can block bacteria and can reduce ear infections by up to 40%? And this has been well studied. And that xylitol, it almost sounds too good to be true. What happened and how we came about this is the Finnish people had one of the worst dental records in the European Union. And then during World War II, they could not get sugar. And so they went to this bark. It's a birch bark that had been used for decades in Russia and to some degree in Germany. And they extracted it and used it. And what they found is that this naturally occurring carbohydrate, a sugar that has a 5-carbon structure, other sugars are 6-carbon structures. This molecular difference is the key to xylitol benefits. What they found was they ended up from the worst dental record in the European Union. They evolved to the best dental record. And on further studies, they realized that this structure of xylitol could not be used by bacteria to ferment. And so the end result is this xylitol was blocking bacteria in the oral cavities. The effect of diminishing bacteria's ability to produce antibiotic resistance and making the pathogenic bacteria in the mouth more susceptible to antibiotics and our own natural immune system defenses. That was pretty exciting, a little complicated, but what they found was that in children, it reduced ear infections and it also reduced and blocked nasal mucosal attachment of strep pneumonia and Haemophilus influenza, and it was reduced by a factor of 68 to 50% in these children. So as a result, reduced dental bacteria, reduced dental caries, reduced upper respiratory and to a degree lower respiratory tract infections in children and in adults. Carol?
Xylitol has another thing to be aware of, and I really do like this as a sweetener in gums. You'll find it in a lot of chewing gum or sometimes candies, hard candies that you suck on for that to get the dental effect. And I really do love the nasal spray with xylitol in it.
And gargle. There's gargles with xylitol.
Yeah, but there's also coming from, in some cases, glucose, which is coming from corn, which is coming from GMO crops. It's no longer a birch bark extract necessarily. So you should also try to check into where is that xylitol coming from. It's very, very interesting. We always seem to run into this particular thing. And while I'm on it, maybe we should address the elephant in the room. High fructose corn syrup.
That's no elephant.
That's a elephant.
But one little caveat with xylitol, you know, you can, if it's not from a GMO source, it's a wonderful nasal wash. It's wonderful to suck on for your dental caries because it alkalizes the mouth and the bacteria cannot create their environment, their acid environment, to proliferate. But the caveat is using it extensively, since it is really not absorbed well through the intestines, it could create a gassy situation or even diarrhea. So you use it in limited quantities, and it can be incredibly effective, particularly from the right source. Now, tell us about high fructose corn syrup.
Well, our pure cane sugar from Hawaii has nearly been replaced throughout our manufactured products with high fructose corn syrup. Here again, we have a big political situation that this has come to pass as an extremely cheap sweetener because we have made it very lucrative for huge factory farms to grow a lot of corn. The corn, as we learned earlier, has BT toxin in it. We're subsidizing the growing of all this. Our taxpayer dollars go into making this sweetener so cheap that now you'll find it in everything.
Now, fructose, let's listen to the word fructose.
Yeah.
Very natural sugar, isn't it?
It certainly is. It is in fruit. And one of the points that you've made several times already in this program is when it's connected to the fibrous in the protein and other things in the fruit, in the whole fruit, and its ratio, the amount of fructose you get in a particular fruit, which is much smaller than when we use an extracted or manufactured form that gives us a big hit. It's a huge, huge difference. Now, one of the things about fructose is it was argued earlier that we have less of a sugar, glucose, insulin swing with fructose because it's a longer acting sugar, but that's not holding out, especially the high fructose corn syrup. We are also seeing problems with pre-diabetic situations, as we discussed earlier, with this particular sweetener. Now, if you go into your grocery store and start reading labels, and you look at cookies and crackers and sodas and Jell-Os and whatnot, you will be amazed to see how much this has taken over the market. It's just phenomenal.
And it's done that
because it's cheap.
And it's toxifying our children. What we're seeing is that this very high influx of high fructose corn syrup in 80% or 90% of the processed foods that we purchase is overwhelming our systems as well as our children. And what we're seeing in children with high fructose corn syrup is fatty liver disease, which formerly had only been seen in alcoholics, and it's a cancer precursor. And we're seeing streaks of it in babies, the beginning of fatty liver disease in 2- and 3-year-olds, which means by the time they're teenagers, what we're dealing with is a serious assault and a pre-cancer liver disease that interferes with their health and interferes with their metabolism. They did autopsies on accidental deaths in San Diego, and what they found in children was 17% of those accidental deaths, car accidents or drownings or whatever. These were not children being treated for cancer or on drugs. These were accidental deaths. And they did the autopsies. 17% showed fatty liver disease, and at different ages to different degrees. And that's a terrifying thought. And that's very directly related to consumption of sugars, and specifically high fructose corn syrup, which is a sugar that has been manufactured. It is just not an unnatural extract. It goes through a process of fermentation and extraction. It is not a natural sugar, and our body has no ability and no resistance to this sugar.
You'll find this sugar, high fructose corn syrup, if you're making a choice and you want to have a soda instead of using a diet one and you go for the sweetened one, this is the sweetener that will likely be in it. Although we are seeing some changes, some of the major manufacturers.
Not major.
They are starting to look at other sweeteners.
Well, it's interesting because in Europe, if you get a soda, first of all, they're more tart than ours are. Mm-hmm. But also, they're not made with high fructose corn syrup. So you don't have the same assault. Although, sodas are not the best thing to drink, nor do we recommend giving them to your children in any way, shape, or form.
No, but I learned something really interesting a while back. Coca-Cola, if you buy the Coca-Cola in the United States, it has high fructose corn syrup. If you buy it in Mexico, it's made with cane sugar. And there's actually a demand in the United States with consumers for the Mexican Coca-Cola.
Oh, it's so much more delicious.
Yes. Yes, and you don't have this GMO thing, hopefully. That's another, you still have to think about it. I'd like to introduce another sweetener I just became aware of is coconut sugar.
Yes, everything, you know, coconut, all the benefits that we're seeing with coconut, and now this new coconut sugar, are those benefits translating into the coconut sugar?
Well, coconut sugar, probably on the whole of it, is quite good. Here we have something that is not a GMO crop. We do have a political issue, though. It's a little bit of a twist. How this is made is the coconut palm is tapped for its sap, much like you would get the sap to make maple syrup and maple sugar. And whole forests, acres and acres of coconut palm, are being diverted to make the coconut sugar. The problem with that is if the coconut palm is used predominantly to create sugar, it never produces coconuts. And then we do not get the benefit of the coconut or the coconut oil. So there are some political considerations when you go to this monoculture of just doing that in its natural form as part of the culture of a country. And I think the Philippines is the country where this is started. The whole tree is used for many, many things, and we lose it if there's a huge demand created for coconut sugar and we start having a monoculture of it. The other benefits that we get from the coconut palm are lost.
Well, let's talk about this has been quite a sweet talk.
No kidding.
But what would you recommend in terms of a sweetener that has more positive effects? Are there any?
Yes. Let's mention another relatively newcomer on the scene, agave.
Oh.
Where do you know agave from?
Oh, well, first of all, I must admit my past, a little bit of tequila.
That's
where the agave came from, the tequila plant. You can see it on the pictures in the front of the agave bottle. And I always knew that as a tequila plant, never knew it as an agave plant.
Another name.
And then come to find out, it's not as good as they're promising, is it?
No, it has some benefits.
Very few.
The agave is not a GMO plant to start out with, so you don't have to deal with that issue. It has a lower glucose index than
I don't know if that's true. That's what it said, but I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I looked it up just to double check. But that doesn't mean it's out of the woods.
No, it's all fructose.
Not at all. And now we're talking about, we're talking about the degree of how you use these sugars. And if you use high amounts of agave as a sweetener in your diet, you're going to run into the same problems as if you use sugar, as we talked about earlier on the show. You're not out of the woods. How about, let's talk about honey for a few minutes.
Well, it's very individual to the honey. In that, again, when you're looking at the little honey and the little bear things that you squeeze and whatever, you're looking at something very highly processed, pasteurized. Again, in the heating, you convert the sugars, which enhance the fructose. Now, honey is about 53% fructose, but contrary to agave, which can be up to 90% fructose, can be completely natural in its raw form, and it can have many health benefits when used in, let's say, this word, moderation. We all like sweet. Everybody likes sweet, but it's got to do with moderation. And now, what is that form, Thapka, Mananuka, am I pronouncing it correctly?
Manuka honey.
And you can find that in an unprocessed form, which is supposedly one of the best honeys with a better balance, more nutrient in it. But again, just like everything else, moderation.
Manuka honey, I'd just like to elaborate because It's quite special. Tends to come from New Zealand. And they have actually numbers assigned to how antiseptic this honey is. The higher the number, the more expensive you're going to find the product. Manuka, the manuka tree, we also know as the tea tree. And this honey is produced by bees who gather pollen from that particular tree. So we already know from tea tree oil what a powerful antiseptic this is. So manuka honey is quite special and could be the one you want to turn to when you're not feeling well and you may want to have something for your cold or sore throat. Mix it with some warm water and gargle with it.
One of the best cough medicines I've found for that tickly, burny throat is manuka honey and lemon. Mix them together, and I find it, in many cases, even more effective than the over-the-counter cough medicines. Now, Carol, we're coming to the end.
Yay, you want one more?
Do you have 1 minute?
I have 1 minute, one that I've used personally. It's called Lohan.
Oh, yes.
Comes from Chinese monk fruit and is usually an extraction. And in general, I like a little Lohan if you want a little sweetness in your tea, for example. If you were to use huge amounts of this and it was otherwise tampered with, I'm sure we'd have problems too. But also a very possible sweetener to be used in moderation, as we spoke about before.
That's Lohan?
Lohan, L-O-N-H-A-N. Chinese monk fruit is where it comes from.
Well, this has been a sweet afternoon.
Yes. And you didn't think we had much to talk about.
No, I said, how could we fill our whole, our whole conversation with sweeteners? But we did, didn't we?
Yes, it's been a sweet deal.
Thanks so much, Carol.
Thank you, Corinne.
And we'll be back next week.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
As I promised, this was an encore best of the best with information that we can use every day in our own homes and in our own life. This understanding that we share today can benefit your health, your family's health, your friend's health, and change some very negative habits that you might have acquired in your eating, drinking habits. I know you learned, I did, even re-listening to this. Learning is more than just hearing, it's incorporating, it's making changes. This information allows you to understand so you can incorporate and make changes and enhance the health of yourself, your friends, and your family. So we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. It's our privilege and pleasure to be able to share time with you. And we'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.